He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Did you see? So they played Oxlan at the end of the game, right, in garbage time, and I think Bronny threw him a lob, Anthony, and you could see him like, all right, the ball's coming, I gotta, and he's like, he's loading up to jump.
He's like rubbing his calves. Like, all right, come on, guys, we need fire up. Fire up, boys.
By the time I didn't clip this because it's just not nice. But so he's by the time he jumps, the ball is passed. Like the ball's already gone out of bounds, and he's like, oh, just missed it. It's like you weren't even close. The ball already passed out of bounds. I'm with you. I think Hayes, and I think what JJ sees is he doesn't trust Hayes mentally. Like he doesn't trust him to mentally make. Like for all the mental mistakes that he's going to make. And I understand that to a degree. And I think there is a level of trying to space out this Minnesota team as much as possible, right? Force Gobert to travel as the maximum amount, you know, in terms of space. And look, Rui hit a few threes early on, which I think helped that cause. I think Rui's just too slow defensively for what they want to do in this series, which
in general, will be, frankly,
His
shot's really slow. His decision making is slow. He's not very agile on defense.
I'm glad you mentioned that. The shot being slow, like again, he should get open looks. But Minnesota to me is very OKC like. The way they're able to dig in and recover, him shot being that slow is a problem. Like an open shot that looks open, and you know, there's a conversation of I think Keith Smith put out like how many shots were open in terms of we gave it to Minnesota. What looks like an open shot for Rui actually isn't because of the way they're able to recover. I think Hayes and basketball, what I love about basketball, it's a flow sport to where it's not like baseball or, you know, those others where offense is so separate from the defense. To me, your offense a lot of times catalyzes the defense and, you know, vice versa. And in those units, especially without Luka, because I think I trust Luka to get his offense in this series in a way where I think it's tougher for LeBron and Austin. We can discuss why. But I think in those non-Luka minutes, giving Jared Vanderbilt and Jordan Goodwin to LeBron and Austin is just like putting handcuffs on or tying one of their guys' hands behind their back and going, go score. Like, that's tough against this Minnesota defense. And I think Hayes just give some conventional basketball to those units where we have a screener that rolls, right? Every time you pick him, like, yes, they can pick and pop. I think LeBron can pick and pop, but he went 1-for-5 from three yesterday. I don't know how his confidence with his jumper. Austin's going to have to hit pull-up jump shots to score in the series, and I think he will going into game two. But I think Hayes as a lob threat is just so important. It forces Gobert to at least respect the rim. And I forgot who, I think Trevor Lane tweeted out that Vando shooting 37% on layups, which like might be better for him just not shooting layups. Not to give Vando any like bail here, but they are like contested. What I mean by that is Vando's not good. These aren't like layups in transition that he's blowing, right? Like he'll pump fake and like he gets maybe the worst bounce I've ever seen at the rim. Where like it just never goes in. It'll touch every part of the rim and come out. It's just so weird. He has the worst touch maybe of any forward I've
seen. I don't think he understands English on the basketball. Like,
oh, I see.
I was about to be putting that one meme with the glasses in the truck. Like,
man, ain't nobody understand the words that are coming out your mouth. But no, like
he doesn't speak basketball. Yeah, it's like a Rosetta Stone for hoops.
But like, because English, right? For those who haven't played basketball, is literally the spin that you put on a ball as you were laying it up, right? So if you're going, if I'm shooting a reverse layup. And I'm using my right hand on the left side of the basket. You flick your wrist this way so that you can get that ball bouncing off of the basket or off the backboard into the hoop. And it, you know, same thing with, you know, left-handed layups on the other side of it, right? You want to flick your wrist so you should get that same. But you don't want to do that if you're shooting, like if I'm shooting a right-handed layup on the right side of the basket and I flick my wrist that way, the ball's going to shoot off in the other direction. And I really think sometimes that, like, I watch his, like, the way he tries to, because essentially what you want to do is hand the ball to the basket, right? You want to, like, you want to just, like, you literally just, like,
I love how this here is like layups 101 for Jay.
Yeah, a little bit, but
year seven. Watching.
But, like, you want to hand the ball to the basket, and it shouldn't be this very complicated thing. But I'll watch him lay up the ball, and he'll do this like weird finger roll thing that adds extra spin onto the rim. And I'm like, no, just drop the ball. Just let it go. You know,
right.
it's the weirdest. And actually it's kind of funny because my kids have a little tiny basket. Right. And actually the hardest shot on this tiny little basket is a layup off of the backboard, because okay, for most of us, we aren't used to being so high above the rim. So it's actually like it's this really weird thing that you're trying to do, and so it's just easier to dunk it. And that's why sometimes I find myself screaming, and I'm sure everybody finds myself screaming at Vanderbilt, just dunk the ball.
Yeah,
dunk it. Don't, because the longer that he tries to do this like extra spin roll, that's how you arrive at 37% at the rim. Jared Vanderbilt, just hand the ball to the rim. It shouldn't be as complicated as I watch it with him. It's truly an astonishing experience watching this guy. He just starts dribbling to the basket. I'm like, no idea how this, well, I know how it's going to go, but I want to know like how it's going to right fail. Like, yeah, like, I know it's, he's going to miss. I can't wait to find out how.
He's the first player where, like, you know his layup's not going in by the way he shoots it. Like, I've never felt that about Blair. It's like, okay, like, he's at the basket. You know, yeah, like, he'll go up. It's like, oh, that is rimming out for sure.
Like, what are you doing? Like, it's, I'm telling you guys, the first time you notice this, it's like, so I saw a TikTok the other day who said, like, the front of Teslas look like Voldemort. And now I can't see anything else. Now that I see, like, when I see Teslas out there, I think, yep, that's he who shall not be named. And I'm telling you, when you guys watch Jared Vanderbilt shoot his layups, especially with his left hand, with his right hand, I think he actually tries to keep it a little bit more simple on the rare occasion he actually uses his right hand. But with his left, for whatever reason, it tucks. Like, I'm telling you, he has that thing tucked like this, and it's like a real whiplash to it when he, you know, you weren't the person to ask this, but did you watch season two of that one Netflix show about the games? Shoot, now I'm blanking on it. But there's this top game that they played in the second season of this Netflix show, where somebody help me out in the comments. But there's this top game that essentially you have it wrapped up crazy tight here, and then you flick your wrist, and the top is on the string, and the string, you pull the string back real hard, and then it spins this top, and that's how you get this thing spinning. And that was like the whole point of one of these Squid Game. Thank you, Inside Out.
Didn't watch Squid Game.
But I'm not, watch, yeah, George, it's Squid Game, and watch Jared Vanderbilt shoot his left-handed layups, and it's literally wrapped up. The ball is wrapped up the same way that the characters from Squid Game were trying to wrap up whatever game that it was that they were playing to be able to get the thing to release, and then it goes. And that's the same event. Like when the ball hits the rim, Jared Vanderbilt's the shot actually spins like a top up there. That's why it hits so much of the rim.
Yeah. That's a reference I'm going to have to save for the summer when I go and watch Squid Games season two. He said, I did didn't know there was a season two. I know there was
not soon, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I saw that there's like a Beast Games or something like that as well. That's kind of a work off of that. No, but what's funny is like this whole conversation like about Jared Vanderbilt. And I think the other side of this that's an issue is he's important in this. Like he is vital in this series to me. We don't really have another guy that we can throw on Anthony Edwards that can we, I think, relatively trust to stay in front of him. And he's kind of why he's paid what he is, right? I mentioned this before. He makes double-digit salary and doesn't dribble, doesn't shoot, can't finish at the rim. A lot of it is this other stuff. He's the guy we throw on the Anthony Edwards, the, you know, Brandon Ingrams, the guys who would torch us, you know, in previous years. And I think he's vital. Him at the center position is a little concerning, but he also, Anthony, we can't play him next to Jordan Goodwin. Like that's a recipe for disaster, yeah, offensively. And, you know, some interesting stuff coming out today where JJ's talking to Dalton Connect, a couple of whispers in the ear.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you know,
talking to him too. Did you see that?
Who?
Palinka was talking.
Oh, Palinka. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he got talked to by both JJ and Palinka. I think we're getting some Dalton.
Oh, yeah. We're getting some Dalton game two stuff coming out soon. Don't listen to Mark Williams on Twitter. Like, don't even look at his Q&A going on over there. I think Vando is super important. Vando and Gabe taking like Rui and DFS kind of minutes is so interesting in that second half. See if they'll go and like do that again going into game two. But I think Hayes is important. Anthony, I think we're so far past that being an option. I just don't think JJ trusts that. And he's gonna go down swinging with the guys that he believes in. And I just don't think that involved
Dorian.
Yeah.
At that point, if you're so, and I'm not saying you are feeling this way, but like if JJ is so against Jackson in this case, and if you're going to go swinging with your guys or whatever, then start the game that way. That way, the minutes that Jackson comes out there and plays are lower leverage. When you start the game with this guy and you start the second half with this guy, you know, this is the lineup that's going to be out there for well, the Lakers are a little different because their death lineup spent so much time together. But I would rather them start that way. You can bring Hayes into the game for Luka and you can have Hayes there as the lob threat for the Austin LeBron lineups rather than it being Vando being the screen setter in those lineups, because those the pick and rolls when Vando is setting the screen, Vando may as well turn around when he's setting a screen and trap whoever is he's setting the screen for the amount of impact he's having on the play there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And like I think they're gonna continue with their defensive strategy that they've been, which is they're going to switch on Luka and then force LeBron and Austin to kind of take pull up jump shots and really try to bait them into it. But I think there's no getting around. I think in this series and we're gonna see it, there's a physical toll that this series takes, and I think it's why Anthony Dorian won't start. I was watching rewatching the second quarter, and after just wrestling with Gobert for the whole first, Jaden McDaniels just decides, I'm going to crash hard every time.
Yeah.
And the cumulative effect of that after dealing with these huge dudes every single time, Anthony Edwards is another guy, super athlete. That's something I think they're going to try to work against as well. But I think Hayes is looked at in this way and some other players are, and what they aren't. And I think what they do bring kind of gets put into the side. And I'm with you. I wish Hayes would play more. I just don't think he will. But Vando's minutes have to be, I think he's important in the series, and they have to be very much careful who he plays with. It's just these offensive droughts that they go on. Like, we were down 27 in this game. 27 in a game one at home. That tells you there were some real, like, you can talk energy, effort, all you want. That's fine if that's the
public advantages there.
Right. If that's the public messaging that they want to go with, I'm okay with that. But I just highly doubt JJ went home. Well, throw this in the trash.
Yeah.
Play harder, guys. Same scheme. I highly doubt that. They have some punches that they're going to have to throw. And again, Minnesota's really good. They can absorb those on the chin and continue to do what they do. And Anthony Edwards is one of the six or seven, whatever, best players in the league. He showed that in game one as well in terms of the threes he can hit and athletic Poppy has that we just can't really match up with. But yeah, I trust LeBron and Austin to be much better. And I just think Luka is going to get what he wants in the series. And that offense should be able to carry you in game two.
How do the Lakers get LeBron going? You mentioned that you just think that LeBron's going to be better and stuff like that. JJ, yeah, after the game, said that they need to get LeBron the ball in some more advantageous spots on the court too. Have you seen anything that would lead you to believe that they could make the game a little easier on him?
Yeah, I think LeBron, he really tried to attack their bigs, and to me that's the wrong approach in this series. Now, he can do that. He can ISO. So the numbers point out that Gobert is actually one of the best switch defenders against LeBron, actually in the last like 5 or 6 years or whatever it is. And Naz Reid is another guy, again, not a great defender, but a guy that can kind of move his feet, is agile, right? I just think like having LeBron switch again, attacking those two against switches is kind of what Minnesota wants. Where I'd like to go to, and where this was a big part of your preview and a lot of people's preview, Mike Conley was chilling this whole time.
Yeah.
Absolutely not put in no actions. And I don't know if we spoke about this, but like Luka likes to hunt the opposite big man. That's just kind of his way. And look, he did that super effectively. 37 points is 37 points. I'm not going to kill the guy. It's not his fault. His teammates didn't get involved. I see some of that as well. That's on the other team to get involved. But I'd like to see LeBron hunt Conley, DiVincenzo. Those are the guys through the post. And we saw a little bit in the second half. I thought that's where he got going. He got some fadeaway jump shots in. Even McDaniels, those guys, like those are guys I'd like to see LeBron back down, get to his fadeaway, get to the rim, get to the line, ways to get him going rather than going against these big men where Minnesota can really like zone up against you and kind of force you to take, you know, step back jump shots or contested shots to the rim. That's what that's what Minnesota's great at. They make you think you can come attack Gobert, and then he's like, then he defends at the rim. He blocked Jackson at the rim. He defended Vando at the rim, which again, I don't know how much props
Vando
defends that, but he shut off a lot of stuff at the basket because they kind of bait you into that. Oh yeah, the rim's open, come attack, and then Gobert comes, and Gobert has one of the best kind of rim defenses. As much as people joke about him, he gets a lot of the benefit of the doubt as well. Like this, he's earned that with the amount of defensive player of the years he's won. So that's where I think LeBron can get going. And even Austin, too. They're going to drop back and trust that they can contest both of those guys in terms of being jump shooters. And we'll see how that goes in game two. But yeah, LeBron in the post, I think, to me, is a way to just get him going a little bit more. And again, can work around the other two that, as well.
Yeah, the LeBron thing, I also think the Lakers need to get out in transition more than they did. And I think he's the nail at the end of that. You know, he's the one who finishes on transition. He's the Lakers' best transition weapon. And when the Lakers take that out of their equation, that really impacts his ability to impact the game. And then the other thing too is defensively, he spent a lot of, like, I think he almost took the, you know, free safety center fielder approach a little too far, where it was a lot more communicating and it wasn't as much moving on defense. And I think he needs to be, if he isn't going to have as active a role offensively, then actually use all of that stored up energy on defense. And I thought he was pretty passive defensively too.
Yeah. Yeah, just on the transition, Anthony, a team with LeBron James and Luka Doncic scored 6 points
in
the
final break.
6 points with the passing combination of those two, that to me is, again, I credit Minnesota as well because they really, I mean, for them to
well all year.
Yeah, I mean, for them to get the amount of offensive rebounds they got while getting back in transition, like that combination there is super impressive. Now, a lot of that also was, I thought, Lakers kind of stabbing themselves or shooting themselves in the foot. But yeah, they got to get more in transition. 25-6
in shooting. They did a little bit of both.
Yeah, right. But 25-6 in terms of the transition discrepancy, like you're going to lose against Minnesota with that. And yeah, just getting LeBron some, I guess, easier looks would help there. And on the defensive end, look, LeBron has a huge defensive ass in this series. Nothing going around that. He just, like, there's a level of, and that's the part where the energy versus the focus versus we're down 27. I'm not going to tag on every roll right now. Like, I'm not going to, you know, kind of exude all this energy to come back from 30. But I will get my offense going. I will kind of find a rhythm there. And I think that's what you'll see in game two. But yeah, if you're going to play Hayes 8 minutes, like those forwards have huge defensive ass, especially against Edwards and the amount of help that's going to be needed, the amount of switching that we're doing. And hopefully, you know, they can get that going in game two. But yeah, we're going to need a bigger LeBron and Austin game to kind of to win that one.
Yeah, I mean, Austin. Yeah, I think with as little organized offense, and I know that that's this trigger term, I guess, for the Lakers coaching staff or whatever, but he's the, like, when the Lakers offense is really humming, the two players that teams really struggle to deal with the most are Austin and Jackson, because when the offense is really going and they put teams in a blender, they wind up having to make a decision between the opposite side shooter or the guy in the dunker spot. Mm-hmm. And if the guy in the dunker spot is Jared Vanderbilt, that makes that decision all the easier. And if the guy on the weak side is Austin, and now teams can kind of shade over to him. Cause I actually thought Austin had some opportunities, and he thought so too, but I thought Austin had a bunch of opportunities actually attacking closeouts, but I just don't think he was ever really in a rhythm and mm-hmm. was pretty timid the whole, like they close out so bleeping hard. Minnesota does. They're absolutely so good. Fly to you out there. Borderline out of control. Not actually out of control, but borderline out of control. And that's something that I think the Lakers are going to have to try to find a way to counter with some attacking of the closeouts, because what they can't do is, like, the guys would close out and the Lakers would just not shoot. And that allows Minnesota's defense to reset, and it keeps them, like, to use Pete's terminology, it keeps them out of the blender.
Yeah.
But if you attack the closeout, and now you force Rudy to rotate, now you force somebody to rotate to the backside of where Rudy just left, and then you make that extra pass there, and you make that extra pass there. How many swing passes did the Lakers make over the course of that game? It was just non-existent.
Right, yeah. Not only did they not use the blender, Minnesota unplugged the whole damn blender and said, like, you're not getting in any rotation. And yeah. Again, that's credit to them. They kept all these actions 2-on-2. They kept the Luka action 1-on-1, which is, all right, Luka, you're going to take a step back jumper. You're not getting anyone else involved. You're not getting to the rim. You're not getting to the line. We'll live with you taking those, and we'll bet on kind of your inability to do that throughout the entire game. And I think that's a pretty clear bet, right? I mean, Chicago game had a similar kind of script to it as well, where I think Luka had 30 in the first half. And look, hitting those step back threes, that's taxing. That's a tough thing to do consistently. And just on your closeout points, yeah, I'm not comparing Rudy Gobert to Anthony Davis, but it's just when you have someone at the rim at all times, you're allowed to be a little bit more physical. You're allowed to run out a little bit more and take away the 3-point line. I thought Austin missed a few shots, or he could have made a couple floaters that didn't go in that are his type of shots. But yeah, if they're going to drop back,
it was a really mental game, I thought, for Austin. He just never looked comfortable out there.
Right. Yeah. And I trust him to get that going. And again, if they're going to be in drop back coverage, like, I think Austin and Luka for sure, but you know, Austin has to be able to punish that. And he's been this whole season, he's a guy that's been taking what, 8 to 9 threes. I think that's a place you got to hunt that. And to beat Gobert, it's not really attacking him directly. You don't go at him. You don't really hunt him specifically. You force Gobert to switch out in the perimeter, and then you run your stuff other places where there's no longer rim, like, protection at the rim. And I thought the Lakers just, again, that's part of staying organized. There's a lot of just, all right, your turn to score on this matchup. Your turn to score on this matchup. I expect, you know, a lot more detailed kind of engagement in the game plan in game two.
Yep. All right. We have a couple of super comments here, so we'll go ahead and get to those and first play this. Fuck Washington! I was so pissed, Raj. I thought that game started and I was going to be able to play the not Jigglypuff, but the, this guy. I was like, hell yeah. That's not Jiggly.
Oh no, that's Kirby.
Kirby. Yeah. Yes. Oh, look at you. The turns have tabled. Let's go ahead and get to these super comments here. And the first one comes in from JK Productions, who wrote, without Hayes, the Lakers lose unless Rui matches McDaniel's physicality. And JJ isn't using Hayes. I just don't see it. Take me off the ledge or talk me off the ledge, Anthony. They can win this series without Hayes. They can't win this series if they don't have Hayes and Ruiz looks like he played on Saturday.
Yeah.
That can't be the Rui Hachimura that you get, because if that's, it's already not a very deep team, and that's a quarter of your rotation that you now have to hopefully not supplement, but replace, whether that comes from Jordan Goodwin, whether that comes from Dalton Connect. Like, you run out of bodies there at that point. I saw somebody after the game, and I think George was asking, hey, can we trim down our rotation? It's like, not much further.
Yeah,
there's not very many options that you can viably go to.
It's funny because, like, when you look at a matchup just on paper, I thought, you know, Rui and Randall would be a nice kind of matchup, especially since Rui did a nice job on Towns. Randall's a direct substitution for Towns for this team. But they attack, and again, without Anthony Davis, obviously that changes a lot of the calculation. He looked like the game was going one speed, and he was, you know, on YouTube, you can go like 0.65 or whatever, 0.75. It felt like the game was just moving too fast for him. The processing speed, he just could not get into it. He was like a minus 25, I think, in the first half or something. Just, he was really bad. And again, he got subbed. His minutes were really decreased in the second. Taking advantage with him offensively is interesting. They hid Mike Conley on him, Anthony, and we tried to run some stuff in the post through him.
Yeah.
It led to fadeaway jumpers. And again, I think Minnesota will gladly be like, all right, you want Rui Hachimura to take fadeaway long twos?
Yeah.
Have at it.
That's not LeBron. That's not Luka. That's not. Yeah.
So he needs to be a little bit more aggressive, to your point, attacking closeouts and, you know, taking open threes when they're available.
Next one here comes from Lil Chris Johnson 18, who writes, how do you think the lineup of Luca, Vando, Dorian, Braun, and Rui would look? Luca, Vando, Dorian, Braun, Rui. Oh, so you're swapping out Austin for Vando, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see it. Yeah, I could see that lineup.
If they had like 10 more games or 15 more games this year to actually trot that lineup out a little bit, yeah. But I'm a little nervous playing a lineup for the first time in the playoffs together.
So my issue with these type of lineups, yeah, I think they can work, but they are so, like, you remove the rim basically, right? Like, this is a lineup where you basically have to shoot very well. Like, this lineup, they're going to 100% pack the paint and go, all right, go ahead and throw this out to Rui and Dorian, who can hit threes. Luka as well can get to a step back. But that's been my whole point with Hayes and, don't kill me, Koloko. Like, just get someone who's a threat above the basket that gives you some vertical spacing, because that's the only vertical spacing you get. Vando's not a lob threat, although he should be a little bit, like, he should be able to jump effectively.
He's such a great athlete everywhere else.
That's the point. He's awesome
his hand,
athlete.
His hand to the touches of basketball, and he moves like Urkel. He's just the craziest thing. Raj, I'm not kidding. I've never seen anything like this, where somebody is so clearly an otherworldly athlete. I think his athleticism has diminished a little bit because of the injuries this year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not quite that up, like, as insane an athlete as he was, say, like last year, but he's still 99th percentile athlete on the face of the planet. Then a ball touches his hands and he immediately, like, just, did you see, he was supposed to do a jump ball and he forgot to jump.
Yes. No, I don't know if he forgot or he refused. But then he looked at the ref, like, and the ref looked at him like, what'd you think I was about? Like, what'd you think was going to happen?
Have you been here before? Like, it was against Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
He should have won that. Come on. That's our possession. And he's just like, oh, shit. That's my bad.
He has amazing instinct. Like, his hands are great. He's great with deflections. Like, yeah, all the stuff that you think would translate just don't on the offensive end. It looks like he does not touch a basketball and then comes in and plays. It's just, it's amazing. But he's important.
They were trying to say that the ref, like, threw the ball up early and the Lakers were, like, angry at him for throwing the ball up early. The ref makes eye contact with Vando. He's like, ready? Here we go. And Vando's like, oh, damn it. I was supposed to do something here, and I forgot. My bad, everybody. All right, last one here comes from Justin Tindall, who writes, can we introduce a rule where fouls aren't called on Gobert so he can stay on the floor, and then you can run Naz Reid off the three-point line? That would be great. It would be funny if, like, you get two foul calls a game that go to a different player. It's like every game you're like ace, maybe like the superstar, you can't just automatically give the fouls, but it can go to a different role player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gobert's two fouls go to Naz. If Naz is shooting the way that he did,
you get to pick.
It was weird. I thought the game started with that. It should have been an and one. Luka missed the layup and Gobert fouled him there. Right. And I'm like, okay, all right. That's setting the tone, all the stuff. And then that call went away, where Luka basically puts Gobert or whatever the big is in jail. Mm-hmm. And then because the big, he knows, is trying to recover all the way back to the basket, Luka jumps straight up. The big runs into his back. And then normally Luka gets that call. And that was exactly the call that he got in the first play of the game against Gobert. And then the call went away. So it was like there was kind of a whiplash moment there for Luka, where like he did it again. He's like, wait, what? I just got this call.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, you know, I got called. I'm Knicks fans aren't really thrilled with me because I said Jalen Brunson is bad for basketball. I wish that Luka would grift less. Like, I wish Luka would just go out there and play and not worry about that kind of cheap call there too. It would be great. You know, and unfortunately, It's I wish that they never called it. I wish that, like, if they eliminated that call altogether, then we would never see that play ever again. But the next worst thing, or the worst thing you can do, is to call it on the first play of the game and then not call it like three plays later, because now everybody, that's when Luka's like, well, hold on, the strike zone just moved. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right. I felt this way watching, like, Houston Golden State last night, where Houston just coming off 152 wins, right, playing a certain style, and you could just see them go, this is not how it was called 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like this, like Sengun's like, Draymond just ripped my head off, and you're laying the ball go the other way. So Jalen Green, by the way, awful night. Fred VanVleet couldn't shoot, but yeah, just some of those calls that they're used to getting. And I think some of this is just how the playoffs go. Some calls that they let go. Jimmy Butler had a lot of stuff where he was doing the foul baiting as well. And again, there was a point where Gobert, I think, picked up his third. I was like, darn it. Like, because Naz Reid was playing so well.
Yep.
And he came back and just rained threes on us. That's definitely going to be a part of this series, who gets in foul trouble and stuff like that. But I trust Luka to, like, hunt Gobert in a way where it's effective. It's all the other plays where Gobert is so impactful that concerns me. But some of those fouls you're just not going to get. LeBron is obviously, I think, watching him so far, he's just not getting calls like we probably think he should, and that's a part they're gonna have to go. Austin didn't get to the line as much as he used to, right? Like, Austin's a double digit free throw guy when we're playing well. I think he got like four free throws last night.
And, well, I mean, total there were 26 shot for both teams combined in that game.
Yeah,
they swallowed the whistles. So
right, and that's a big part of our offense. Like, that's a huge key in our win. So we'll see how that goes in game two. But tomorrow's as close to a game seven as you can for a series that's not over. Like,
oh, I don't know. Yeah, no, this is a must win. Gotta win tomorrow. I know Aaron's always like, it's not a must win until you can actually go home. It's like, no, this is you're not winning the series if you don't win this game. All right, well, this has been fun. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We will be back in the lounge after tomorrow night's, and then I'm also going to narrate the piece that I alluded to earlier
for the lowdown here in a little bit. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Silver Screen and Rolls, Raj Chapalu. Make sure you guys are checking out all his work. It's been fantastic. And yeah, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.